So our next discussion is with a group of panelists dedicated, committed to, and focused on another topic, and that is water security. Can't do much without it. Drought, urbanization, climate, development, population, all of that complicates the issue of water security. And again, we ask the question, to set the stage a bit, what do we know about it? What do we think about it? What do young people, how do they connect this incredibly precious commodity with the food that they eat? So we asked about water security when we sent our cameras out on the streets, and here's some of what we heard.
So to me, water scarcity means lack of water. So some countries probably lack water. In the U.S., I don't think it's as big of an issue, but I think a lot of developing countries, water scarcity is probably huge. And if you don't have water, then I think that leads to a lot of other problems, including health problems.
So it's a developing country problem. Well, not really. Yes, but not entirely. The world is growing. It's more pertinent, really, than ever to minimize the environmental footprint of farming. But it's very much, as we heard earlier with some of the articles I mentioned that are up there now and the drought that David mentioned, a challenge here. So our panelists that you're going to hear from now are taking very interesting, proactive, and often voluntary steps to be good stewards of the land that they're living on and that we farm to ensure that there's enough water to drink and to grow our food. So I'm going to introduce each of them to you, ask them to come up, and then we'll engage a conversation with them for a few minutes. Mitchell Bauman, he oversees FDK Partnership. It's a third-generation, 12,000-acre family farm, one of the first operations in the Hoxie, Kansas area to use an irrigation system. On the high plains of northwestern Kansas, FDK Partnership pushes the envelope with enlightened precision. It's been completely no-till or strip-till for more than 15 years. Have a seat. You can take whichever seat chair you want. You want that's the one you want? That's the magic. Okay, good. and he operates more, as you'll hear, more like a Fortune 500 CEO than a traditional Kansas farmer. Behind the dedication to the next generation best practices and big business acumen is a different kind of impetus because he takes his legacy seriously and pays a lot of attention to the details of land and water as he strives for a sustainable operation. Now, our next panelist joining Mitchell here is Gary Beck. He's a farm manager of Hillside Ranch. He oversees operations at Hillside Ranch in Blaine County, Idaho. He's been there for the past 17 years. He grows malt barley. This is the fun part. He grows malt barley for Miller Coors and Anheuser-Busch. So we'll ask you what you drink. The ranch encompasses 2,500 acres of barley, 1,500 acres of alfalfa, 8,000 acre blue spruce tree farm, and 1,000 acres of wetlands and ponds, right? If I got the acreage right? And you have how many kids?
I have 7 kids.
If there's a correlation between acreage and children, here it is. He holds a degree in agricultural business from Utah State University and resides in Idaho with his wife and his children. And I want to bring up Dr. Marco Ugarte. He's the sustainability manager for water and energy stewardship with Miller Coors. And there may be free samples, I don't know. He's accountable for the comprehensive energy and water stewardship strategy for the company, serves as the main point of contact for strategic partnerships between Miller Coors and the Nature Conservancy. Been working together here with the Beverage Industry Environmental Roundtable, United Nations Global Compact, and Sustainability Consortium. As an entrepreneur, he's received remarkable awards from MIT, ASU, Walmart, and others to launch technology-based innovation ventures addressing sustainability challenges. So I'm going to come over here and open up this conversation. And again, in a few minutes, I'd like to open it up to all of you. But Mitchell, let's just start with you. To explain what you're doing with your operation and when you started this and why?
When I graduated from college, I went to Fort Hays State out in the western in Kansas there.
You're from Kansas?
Yes, I am, yes. And when I come home, we got a lot of irrigation. And I got there was a gentleman getting off the groundwater board. He asked me to get on. I think I was 25 years old at the time. I actually got elected. There was 4 guys that ran against me, and I guess my family, my father's name got me on. I don't know how you call it, but I went to all these groundwater meetings and I realized that, man, I mean, we just keep talking about pumping and pumping and pumping. And my wife and I, we have four beautiful kids ourselves. And I was realizing if we don't do something here, because naturally it's in the media all the time, the Ogallala Aquifer is going down. What are we going to do? Well, nobody was doing anything. So I guess we brought it up with the help of our groundwater manager, Wayne Bossert, whom is retired from our groundwater district. We you know, do the political system that the state has. We just decided, we looked at a different bunch of different avenues to reduce the water consumption, you know, instead of voluntarily. You know, it wasn't going to work voluntarily being with a bunch of farmers. Well, we started a LEMA, Local Enhanced Management Area, that we started in our high priority area. And a high priority area is in our groundwater district of GMD number 4 in the northwest part of Kansas, where there's just too many straws pulling out of the water.
All right, well, before you, so too many straws pulling out. What is happening with your aquifer exactly?
It's declining.
By how much?
Oh, I mean, on our farm, probably a foot and a half a year. Yeah.
How serious is that?
Oh, it's very serious. We only have 60 feet of saturated thickness left. Of water. That's how much water we have in the bed, you know, on our bedrock above us. It's 60 feet. Back in the good old days when Dad flooded, there would have been 200. You know, yes, but we've really declined it here lately.
And so, the cause of this?
Just too much. Too much pumping.
Too much. So you got involved to do something about this.
Yeah, we just basically got a lot of farmers together. We did have to go through the political system, which was a lot of fun for a farmer, not understanding that. But farming is politics, so and we got into that. But what we've ultimately come down to, not saying everybody went for it, because there was a lot of naysayers, but we come together and we just formed a LEMA with the help of our groundwater district. And we're voluntarily, not saying voluntary, we're using the Division of Water Resources in the state of Kansas as the managing pool to help us manage this, you know, for the rules and the regs if you get over pumping and which not much is going to occur because our wells have went down. But, you know, we had to have a whip to keep us in line. So
how much are you trying to?
20%.
20%
reduction. That's a more or less, you could say. Traditionally, the wells in this area were pumping between 14 to 16 inches, say 15 inches. Now we're doing 55 inches over 11 years, so. I mean, over 5 years,
over
55
five.
Inches over 5 years, which give you 11 inches a year. And there's a ton of flexibility in there. I mean, it's good for our community. It's good for the feedlots. It's good to, you know, that we're proactive. We're, you know, instead of being a reactive, because farmers are typically reactive to change. And I guess the guys that I represent, that I work with, we've taken the change on.
And how are you doing this? How are you achieving these savings?
We're just reducing our pumping. We're not saying voluntarily 20%, but with the help of the state, we're just declining. Over 5 years, you can use 55 inches.
And you say you ran into some politics and some conflict with some of your neighbors. What was that all about?
Well, just the lines, the borders. We have these high priority areas that are in these districts. I mean, there's five irrigation districts or groundwater districts in the state of Kansas. In western Kansas, and ours, we've set up high priority areas, and which it comes down to, I can get into all the algorithms and all that, but what it comes down to is there's just too many pumps pulling out of there, too many wells, and so we took this data, we took these areas, and I guess I'm the guy that just decided, hey, let's have a conversation about this, education, let's talk about this, and pretty much, yes, there was naysayers, but we took it and we went with it. And here's where we're at today. We just completed our first year.
I'm going to ask you this, and then I want to move on to Gary. Is 20% going to be enough?
No. Everybody needs to be in it. That's what we're finding out. And I don't mean to be direct with the 20%, but we had to start somewhere. We had to change the mentality of the farmer.
Have you done that?
In a sense, yes, but in a sense, no. I mean, there's some people you're not going to change, and there's some people that will take on change. The people that I represent in western Sheridan County and eastern Thomas County in the state of Kansas, we have taken it. But yes, there are people that have not taken it, and I don't think we will ever get them to take it, but we have taking it on. And it's a great thing. It's made us better producers. I'm making more money on these smaller gallon wells than I am my big ones because we're more micromanaging them. We're using the technology, the GMOs, all the traits that all these great companies are bringing out. We're utilizing them. We're understanding our data better. And now, yes, we are taking it to the next level. And it is exciting. It's exciting for my wife and I and our kids because I got three little boys and a little girl that I hope want to do. I mean, they love to go out to the farm, and this is where we're at. So
you want to have a farm to pass on to them if you're going to do that. Gary, tell us about Hillside Ranch.
Hillside Ranch. Well, before that, I was really nervous to get up here in front of everybody today, but when David Hollenrake told me I was sexy,
everything went well.
I was like, I can do this. Anyway, Hillside Ranch.
There'll be
Ranch.
A great breakout session on.
Hillside Ranch. We live in a beautiful, pristine area in Idaho, next to Sun Valley, near a creek called Silver Creek. Does anybody know where that place is? Silver Creek. Great fishing. Yeah, come and I'll take you fishing next year. Great place. So where we are, it's a beautiful place. We have wetlands. Trying to give you a picture. Farther north, a lot of farming. Pivots, and we grow malt barley for Miller Coors. And the family, the Stevenson family, has been growing malt barley for, started out with Coors and Miller Coors in 1971. So we've been with them for a long time.
I should say the Stevenson family is of the Stevenson family of Adlai Stevenson, right?
That's correct.
Adlai Stevenson was the father of your boss or the grandfather?
Yes. Yeah, so, I have a boss that is amazing. I don't see him very often, so you can't ask for a better boss than that. Not to say I don't like to see him. Okay, let's not confuse things here.
So take us into the water part of the story.
Water. So about 10 years ago, we decided as Hillside Ranch, we need to do something just like my friend here. We realize, we're in trouble. Aquifers are dropping, and wells are going deeper. Costs are going up, and we decided we need to change something. And so with the Nature Conservancy, now everyone's going to think, how is farming and Nature Conservancy, how can you work together? Actually, quite well.
Hillside reached out to Nature Conservancy, or Nature Conservancy reached out to Hillside?
It started with easements. As we reached out to Nature Conservancy.
Why?
Just to preserve what is there. Preserve the wetlands, preserve the creeks, preserve the farming area where the main ranch is.
How did the water become part of this conversation?
Well, it first started out Silver Creek. The temperature in Silver Creek was starting to go up, the temperature, and which is not good for the fish, and it just a dominoes effect. Well, then we, in 2010, with the help of the Nature Conservancy, Miller Coors came into the scene. And it helped us to understand, they asked us to be their showcase barley farm, which at the time, I told them, no, I don't want to deal with it. And now I'm glad we did.
You didn't want to deal with it because you just didn't want to deal with it.
I didn't want to deal with the paperwork and the hassle of having people show up at the farm. And, you know,
being the showcase farm meant what?
At the time, we didn't know. Okay. But now what it means to us is technology to help us understand the data we are collecting to save more water.
What exactly are you doing to save water?
We've done quite a few things. First, again, I told you it started with the creeks and the streams and how we can pull away from the riparian areas as we farmed because a lot of this ground is sub-irrigated. It's wetlands. But then we realized, wait a minute, let's go to what's actually allowing that property to flourish. So we moved to the conventional farming aspect of everything. And so it was great. We changed sprinkler packages, which a lot of farmers do. We started shutting off end guns off of the pivots. Does everybody know what a pivot is? We've got a couple hands. A pivot is a system which is about 12, a normal size pivot. It's about 1,200 feet long, and it goes in a circle. Covers 120, 130 acres. And they're bigger than that. And so the irrigation systems we were running, you know, we hadn't changed the sprinkler packages in years. And so some of these packages, we were pushing out of them about 1,400 gallons a minute. Now we're down to 900 gallons a minute. And I think we can even go lower than that.
That's because of the technology that you're using?
Yes. So we've gone to a lot of GPS panels on our pivots, which allow the pivots to speed up and slow down. And in areas where I need more water, I can program to slow down in those areas and speed up.
Are you saving money as a result of using less water?
Oh, yeah. Of course we are.
Proportionate amount of money savings in the water that you're using. Does this affect your productivity, your yield?
At first we thought it would affect our yield with the decrease in water. But with the technology we're seeing, it's actually our yields increased with using less water.
Marco, why did Miller Coors get involved in this? Why did you want to make his a showcase farm? Why does his use of water concern you, because you're in the business of selling beer?
Absolutely. I think that when you think about, in general, about a beer company, you don't usually think about research and development or maybe what is the larger role in the community that a corporate citizen can play. And for us in brewing industry, 90% of any given beer is water. And when we essentially commission a number of a full, similar to a carbon footprint in the whole organization from the field all the way into the table of consumers, we had a blueprint or essentially a water footprint, and we found out that 90% plus of the water is coming from farming operations, not inside the brewery, not inside the four walls and all the technicality and world-class manufacturing, but it's actually happening before we start processing all the hops, all the barley, and all the adjuncts. So that has been a very eye-opening finding for the organization, because we have a corporate goal of reducing our water-to-beer ratio. The water-to-beer ratio, it's a very critical key performance indicator for brewing industry, for soft drink industry. And a lot of businesses, they make or break because of that ratio. And that's important. We will achieve that goal. We will set some goals. But the real big opportunity for a company like us is really in the farm. And we have had historically the privilege of partnering with around 900 different families across the United States, mostly concentrated in Colorado, in Wyoming, in Montana, and Idaho. So we really want to, I mean, we already have 50, 70 years of partnership or relationship. And right now we're doing, putting the next steps, investing in the right engines to be part of this journey. But really, all the groundwork needs to happen in the farm. And that's why initially we approach Idaho as one of our sourcing regions. And most importantly, the Stevensons also leading the work with Gary and the Nature Conservancy. The Nature Conservancy has been a great partner because they provide expertise, they provide the connections, because sometimes, again, as a beer company, you have an agronomy team, you have brewing materials, research and development, but you are not necessarily there on site with boots on the ground. So you need somebody that can facilitate that relationship, that can even translate some of the ideas, some of the programs that you have in this kind of corporate side of the business into the actual grower community.
Marco, I want to be really clear. Be really clear as to why Miller Coors did this. Is this about corporate responsibility? Is this about being able to say you're a more sustainable company, because that's popular in the marketing language, especially with young people? Is it a bottom line driven thing about water? What are your real motivations here as a corporation?
Absolutely. We are a joint venture between SAB Miller, based out in London, and the Molson Coors Brewing Company in Golden, Colorado. Both parent companies had already a big tradition of resource stewardship programs and what it's called sustainable development programs. So when we came together in 2008, we initially have the sustainability entity within the company. And the company initially had also a specific responsibility, C-level officer, in terms of ethics and transparency. but the item of resource stewardship and sustainability as itself has been with the company, with very specific examples. From the core side of the company, we are the inventors of the recycling can. So we had that specific history and baggage inside wired into the company. From a more general sustainability aspect, we have always been very mindful of these three dimensions. Of the social aspect, as I mentioned before, we have this long-term relationship with growers in different sections of the United States. Then we have, of course, the environmental aspect, not only in the metrics that we track inside the four walls of the brewery, but outside in the supply chain, in what we call the agricultural supply chain. And then it comes specifically into the economic aspect. It's not only for the sake of being financially sound as a beer company, but also being able to help the communities that are part of this extended supply chain. Particularly speaking about the results and outcomes of the Showcase Barley Farm are the savings in terms of energy and water. And for example, with an original average cost of $50 per acre, after making and implementing these management practices that Gary just mentioned, it was reduced by more than 50% these specific costs. So essentially, we're talking about a $21 per acre in terms of the outcomes. And I think that is very important and, most importantly, tangible, because that is really reflects that a best management practice can actually help the business case for the farmers, because it's their livelihood.
Well, Gary, how much did this cost? I mean, you had to get your new sprinkler packages and other things, right? So this required an investment on your part. Did you have to lay that out? Did MillerCoors supply the money? Did the Nature Conservancy come and hand you a check?
Well, MillerCoors first tried to give us the check, and then we were going to go take it and go on a vacation. But then we decided we better go through Nature Conservancy first. So the first three years, they gave us $140,000.
They gave you $140,000. Did that cover the full cost of this?
No, not even close.
Not even close.
No.
So what are we talking about?
It was probably more like a $250,000 investment.
To recover that over time?
Oh, yeah.
Over how much time?
Some of them will take 5-6 years to see some return. But, you know, for us, it's a long-term deal.
Let me ask the two of you to discuss this. This is a very unusual partnership between the Nature Conservancy, farm, and business. What's been difficult or challenging about putting that partnership together? Is it something that is going to be and is being replicated across the landscape?
I think that the program, I mean, we have been since the initial exploratory conversations in 2008, the farm, the Showcase Barley Farm, came into being in 2011. And right now we have, in a cumulative sense, through all these different best management practices, the farm has been able to save beyond 270 million gallons of water. Just to give a specific snapshot of the great work that is happening, we're trying to expand this model into other areas. And we know there are a lot of challenges right now and also projected into the future. The fact is that we know that even as a beer company, we can do this alone. So we really need to go and look for the right partners, sometimes with expertise, sometimes with research capabilities. We are actively seeking for undergrad students, grad-level students conducting master's or PhD research. So they are advancing also the rationale and the cutting-edge research to better inform our pathway into this aspect. So we're trying to expand this program into other areas of the community. But there has been a specific number of challenges. One of them has to do with how do you introduce, for example, technology into an operation that historically has been extremely successful, that they are already, by definition, resource stewards, and then you come in with a dialogue trying to implement maybe a new metric or coming with not very user-friendly language to try to go and measure things. So I think that part of, certainly a critical part of this process, is to better understand what is in for me as a company, what is in for me as a grower and as a farmer, and most importantly, what are the shared challenges and opportunities that we can essentially agree upon and work together. We are, as a brewing company, we are not the experts on farming, on fertilizer management, or optimization of pesticides. So that's why we want to be part of this journey, and we want to learn from the farming community.
Did you just tell them we'll give you free beer for life or something like that?
We almost have, as a beer company, we have the great opportunity and privilege of hosting what we call the Watershed Happy Hours. So, for example, we have in Fort Worth, Texas, we have the brewery there. So just to kickstart the conversation, we host a meeting with all the different stakeholders, students with major universities, government affairs, different entities, NRCS comes in, the growing community comes in, and then honestly, we sit at the table, we have some beers, and we start talking about the issues.
It's a really good thing you're at universities, because they don't know anything about beer there, so there's a lot of... Hardest part of this? Partnership?
Communication. You know, and that's one thing. If you, all of you know farmers, we don't like to share too much. Shaking his head, you're right. We don't. We don't want to share our cutting edge. We don't want to share what's working for us, because eventually, you know what? It's not going to help us out. But long term, working with them helped us understand, with Nature Conservancy through MillerCoors, helped us understand our data, what we need. We were doing these things. We were working with our water. But we didn't understand the savings.
Mitchell, let me bring you into this, because these are two different, completely different models. This is farmer-driven, yours. It's voluntary. This is something that involves this very interesting partnership of interests. What do you hear from this conversation that applies to your experience, if anything, or could be brought to your experience?
Well, I think like Gary was saying there, everybody wants to know how efficient are you. I mean, the average size of our wells that we're talking about are probably on the low end, probably 250, probably up to maybe 650 gallons. Where traditionally, when this ground was flooded, you know, they were 12 to 14. Some of them were 2,000 gallons, but naturally, since 74 to now, when Dad was flooding, they all got pivots on them. You know, we took the voluntary. We all realized that we needed to go to pivots. You know, we were putting too much water, you know, into the river system in Kansas, and there's not that many rivers in Kansas, so you know, we were putting it out there. But I mean, it's just come to, we need to be better at what we were doing. And like Gary said, it was competitiveness. It's communication. One is communication.
Has that been a challenge?
Oh, no. I mean, no, because you got to get the issues out there. I mean, I guess maybe my wife doesn't think this about getting things out there in the open. But when I'm dealing with the other farmers.
We'll get to her in a minute. She's in the back of the room.
She's calling in from Skype.
Yeah. But, you know, it's easy. It's not easy, but you got to get the dialogue. You got to communicate with them. When I say them, the other farmers, the other stakeholders that we had in this area. And then, naturally, nobody wanted to give up their competitive secrets, because you're all in competition. So you would rather go 100 miles away to talk to somebody.
Was that an obstacle for you in pulling this together? Did you sense competition was a problem in getting this sort of voluntary agreement?
No, I think because of the community that we live in, we could all see the end. Nobody wanted to acknowledge it, but you could see it out there. Like, we just need to do something. So with the help of our groundwater district and the help of Division of Water Resources in the state of Kansas, we were able to achieve this LEMA.
Let me ask you all one other question, then I'd like to open it back up to all of you for questions you might have. This is a room full of agricultural journalists, and many write and report for people, for other farmers and for people in the business. What do you feel farmers and people in agriculture least understand, most need to know about this issue of water? Because many people would say, well, it's pretty obvious. There's less water, you got to use less, you got to figure it out. But it's much more complicated than that, especially when you start thinking about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it and how it's going to be enforced. What is it, do you think, that people need to know about this topic?
Well, I mean, I think that we are willing to change. I mean, the mentality of a farmer is they're bold, they're strong, and I'm just big, I'm not strong. I guess I'm more management, but I guess what the deal is, it's just that we will take on change. It's inevitable that if we don't, we will get passed up, because we're using the technology. I mean, and there's all this technology out here, but I think what got lost on our farm is that I've got young men on my farm that have, you know, that have went to trade schools, and we're collecting all this data, and we just have USB cards full of data, but we never knew what to do with it. I mean, there's not enough time in the day to physically, we got to outsource. And I think that's something that I've started to understand after going to some.
Andrew, you really are talking like a businessman.
Yeah, we started that. We have to.
What
go
are you
to
outsourcing?
People.
Like what?
Well, I mean, just to analyze the data.
What are you talking?
Our yield data, our planning data, our spraying maps. Like we were talking earlier, we're going to use this in the future with partnerships to ultimately the people that are selling the food to the mom, to the family, and in the bigger cities. Well, we're more rural. We're going to utilize this. We have to adapt this technology, and we're using other people that have the computer skills that I do not have, or my guys, we don't have the time, that we're utilizing this data that we never had. We had the data. We have 20 years of data that, you know, from our red combine to the green combine, we're using it. But now we're utilizing that data, and that's what makes it exciting, but it takes time. It takes a lot of meetings and a lot of good communication, bringing all the people that we work together from our chemical dealers, seed and everything. It takes a lot of meetings, and we're bringing it all together to save the water because we're putting the right hybrid and we're using the right chemicals. And in our area, chemicals, if you have to go put a half inch of water on to activate that herbicide, it's a big deal now. Because you only got 11 inches. I mean, you can spread that water out over 5 years, but everything has to be activated by water. And that becomes a big deal in an arid climate of 15 to 18 inches of rain. Right now, we're only getting 10. So, and it's a big deal.
Gary, what do people need to know?
What was the question?
What?
No, I'm kidding. You know what? One thing we have done with MillerCores, it's been really interesting in our community. It started because it's sustainability. It's a word. It's being thrown around. What does it really mean? Well, we invited the neighboring schools, elementaries to middle school, to high schools out. They're science teachers. We've talked to them all with the help of Nature Conservancy. And they come out on a sustainability field trip. And so they come out, they meet on the farm, they get to climb on all the big tractors and play on the equipment like I get to do every day. And then we take them to the Nature Conservancy, and we talk about sustainability, about the water use. And for me, it's the youth, because some of these kids were amazing. They'd ask me questions, and I'd be like, what did they just say? They just need to know. They got the questions. I want them to ask them, but they want to know more. They're like little sponges. And it was brought up earlier about these newer generations coming up. We need younger farmers. And they're not out there.
What do farmers need to know about this, do you think?
You know, I have a lot of neighbors that have thought this whole Barley Showcase farm was just going to be a flop.
Thought it was going to be a flop?
Going to be a flop. They didn't think it was going to work. And they told me that. Now, a lot of them are using, not just because of what we did. It was between the three of us, between MillerCores, Nature Conservancy. And really, Nature Conservancy is where I need to take my hat off to, because a lady named Dana Gross, who is the manager of the Silver Creek Nature Preserve, she's amazing. She's the one that really thought outside the box. A lot of times, and we're in the box, we got to get outside the box, and it's happening. It's just going to take some time.
But it's a little interesting, because in many quarters, environmentalists are not seen as allies of the farm.
No, and you're right, because they love talking about the organic part of it, and they love talking about all that. But for me, we disagree on a lot of things. Don't get me wrong, we disagree. They're great to work with, but we disagree. And we used to be a 900-acre, part of the farm used to be 900 organic farm, until one day we sprayed some chemical that was a fungus, which killed insects, splashed in the sprayer's eye, and he lost his eyesight. Huh, pretty safe stuff, right? So those are some things we've just had to change with time. Now, again, you know, it's just, we just got to be smarter.
Marco, let me let you conclude this, and then we'll turn to the audience in terms of what do you think people, what have you most learned from this? What do people need to know? What do farmers need to know about this water equation?
I think that we need to collectively understand the market, the retailing side, the brand manufacturers, and also the growing community, that only together we can really advance this great, I mean, really to reach and get this big opportunity. Companies like us, we don't have all the expertise, but maybe we have a partner or maybe a technology that can be implemented. So I think that part of the roadmap is to not only tell the story of I mean, how successful the farming community is already, the great job you are already doing out there. Now, if by partnerships, if by emerging technology, if it's a GIS, if it's a calculator to allow us to better collect the data or the information, and as Mitchell, you said before, you need, once you have all that information, then what happens? Who mines that data? What are the business decisions that can positively impact the farmer, the community as itself, and eventually other sections of the business? So I think that what really the community needs to know is that we want to be part of this journey with you, and if we can facilitate the partnerships, if we can be the conveners with other federal entities, we are happy to do that. Sometimes we listen and we hear about, for example, federal entity grant programs, but you know about paperwork, right? It's, you start with this, and then you start stacking more and more paperwork just to apply for.